Conversations. Inspiration.
Is there anything she can't handle? She looks fear in the face day after day, but yet she never runs. She's unbreakable. She's a warrior. She's you.
Growth.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Community.
These things happen because you have to live your true self in a bigger way.
You'll hear celebrity interviews, healers, inspirational and hilarious stories. Most importantly, Maria wants to talk with you. Now, here's your host, Maria Menounos.
Yeah, we will. Happy Friday, everybody. It is August 3rd. And you know what day that is. It's Ashley Daniels' birthday!
Thank you.
In fact, we should be playing happy birthday music, but... Ashley wants to run the world, so this is her version of the happy birthday song.
Thank you.
Ashley Daniels, in your 30s now, tell me, what does it feel like, and how are you going to run the world?
Well, I've got a lot of plans. I'm very thankful, to be honest with you, because I feel like it's not a better. There's no better time for me to step into this new world of... the 30s, then with the wisdom that you have taught me. I really mean that. I am so thankful. I feel like looking back on just even a year ago, not knowing the things that I know now, it's mm-hmm. just like, how did I even survive? And I'm excited because I feel like next year I'll say the same thing, you know, because every day I learn something new from you. I don't want to tear up, but thank you because you're like a sister to me and I'm just so thankful for you. You've taught me so much.
Oh, no, now you're going to make me cry.
And, yeah, I'm just really appreciative because I never thought I'd meet somebody that would take the time to explain things and, like, be patient with me. And I'm just, yeah, I don't have any words for it, so I'm sorry. This is not supposed to be happening.
Ash never cries. Like, you never let yourself cry. Never you let yourself be vulnerable like that. I don't think I've ever seen you cry other than when I told you I had a brain tumor.
Never cried in front of any. I don't cry in front of anybody. Yeah, that was a bad day.
Yeah,
thanks
that
for
was
that.
A rough one.
That was a rough one. Yeah, that was an interesting day. But thank you because I love you very much.
Oh, I love you too, and. I've seen such growth in you, and you know, to ruin your card, which I might have to tell you what's in the card because I write like a kindergartner. I mean, it's not that I don't know how to spell. It's just sometimes my hand does extra things. So the is has two I's, but not because I think there are two I's in is. As I'm writing this, I'm like, oh, God.
Some Medford Public School Systems cursive classes, because I had the really bad cursive classes, too. I have two I's in my letters.
Actually, I won the best handwriting award
in
first grade. And then I shit the bed after that.
Yeah.
All went downhill.
Yeah, what happened after that?
No, but you know, I think it's great because I've seen you blossom and grow into the woman you are, rather than the woman maybe you were influenced to be and just or kind of lost along the way, maybe.
Yeah.
And I feel like you've grown into your talent, and. You know, you've been such an amazing co-host. Like, you really add so much to the show every time you do it. And I have a lot of fun with you.
Thank you.
Like, it's really cool to see. And, you know, I think even, you know, with, you know, you, Christy, watching how she's guided and mentored you and not been a competitive woman when, you know, the position for your job came up. These are things that we don't talk about on the air necessarily,
yeah.
But you know, the truth is you wanted that job.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the way it all shook out was exactly the way it was supposed to go.
Yeah.
But instead of hindering Christy's success, mm-hmm. you worked so hard above and beyond to help her succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Even more than that, Maria, I would really go so far as to say I would not have survived the last few months, and I wouldn't still be here if it wasn't for Ashley, and that's the truth.
I'm really proud of you, though. I think that you've grown so much, and mm-hmm. like, I'm so glad that you you allowed yourself to go there and trust, because I think that we were supposed to work together because you lost hope in friendships or companionships or any type of employee relationship. I guess not employee. I guess colleague relationship.
Yeah.
So. I think AfterBuzz taught me that, and I wanted you to learn that because I had I had that kind of experience at AfterBuzz, and I think you did too for the most part, but sometimes we lose our way, like when
I was lost, and you helped me a ton. I mean, just not just supporting me, but also your patience and guiding me. I mean, this girl gives great advice.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I think a lot of it is handed down from you, Miss Maria.
Definitely, it's not coming from me.
But it's always what I need to hear.
Yeah, it was so interesting to watch. You know, like when you were having a rough time, Christy. She and I both were on the same page. I'm like, I feel like Christy was sent to us for a reason. Mm-hmm. I feel like Christy was sent, that there's a reason that you were here, and it was for your healing, and it was for our growth too.
Totally.
And totally. For us to have a solid, cool unit of mm-hmm. women.
Yep.
And instead of being impatient and quitting, and I mean that on every one of our levels.
Oh, totally.
We all grew together and came together, and just to see, it was just interesting. Like I watched Ashley when she could have put the fork in you, let's say, right?
Absolutely.
She was like, no, I think she deserves another chance. I think we can make this work. I think, you know, she can get this. Like, it was just a really special thing. And I don't think people talk about that stuff often. And I didn't plan on talking about that right now, but it just happened. And that's why I love the show, because whatever happens, we go with it.
And I'll never forget any of this, Ashley. I mean, this—you've made a profound impact on, like you say, my ability to trust people, mm-hmm. and just really, really a huge impact.
That's really sweet of you. Thank you. But I think just the fact that, like, we do have that relationship now, mm-hmm. the three of us, and we're all like, we actually really enjoy each other's company.
Well, Larry Curly Productions.
Yeah, truly, exactly. That is basically it. Yep. I love being around you guys every day, and I'm so, I mean, honestly, like, it's the best birthday gift ever, just to have, like I said, I'm not going to say it again, but yeah, you know what I was going to say, just to be around you, Maria, and you, Christy, so.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And we do. We get to learn and grow together every
day.
Yeah,
totally.
Right?
100%.
It's
oh, my
so
gosh.
So cool.
Yeah.
I feel like we're so lucky.
We are very, very, very lucky.
So now carrying this into your 30s. Ooh.
Yes, I know.
What are your big plans?
I have reevaluated so much in my mm-hmm. life, things that maybe at some point I'll share, but I just plan on living for me now and not waiting for other people to make decisions, mm-hmm. other people to, you know, and I think sometimes you have to let go of comfort or security to live.
Yes.
And I think that's been my biggest struggle is
I'm
afraid.
Well, it's like golden handcuffs, right?
Yeah.
In life, you know, sometimes you have to let go and surrender and know that, you know, God will provide and you will be okay. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, there are options. Like I'm a survivor. I've gone through a lot in my life and I've never said that, but we're all survivors in a certain way. And my background is I've survived a lot and I know that this would be fine. I would make it work.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain.
What she's talking around.
What I'm talking around. I would make it work.
A certain situation in our life.
Yeah, exactly. And so I need to trust that. But I wouldn't have been able to feel that way if I didn't have the knowledge that you've taught me, because there's so much that I think even people from where we're from in Massachusetts, like there's so many people that don't even know about the holistic things that you discuss or like the meditations mm-hmm. or they're like behind in a lot of things. And so we come here and it's like, we've just like been like jolted. Like we've just like been on the fast track, like almost like took a time machine ahead of time. And then you go back and it's like, you go back to Massachusetts or somewhere,
wherever you're from. Yeah.
And then you're like, whoa, it's like a time. It's like going backwards in time. Mm-hmm. So,
Like when I used to go home, I used to have this feeling of depression. Like I would feel like there was a ceiling for me there.
Yeah.
And I would feel a little claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing to say about them.
No,
or it.
God, no.
It was really me feeling like my limitations there, right? Like I couldn't fully express myself. I couldn't fully be myself. I couldn't fully do what I needed to do. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So
because you have people kind of limiting you in a sense or questioning you or out here. It's
well, when you're not on
the
same page with people, like it's if they're not on the path that you're on, mm-hmm. it's hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know where I would be if I wasn't here. I know where I would probably be and I wouldn't be very happy. But, you know, but that's another story.
Well, I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
And, you know, 30s are great because it's one step closer to 40. And I feel good at 40.
You look good.
You're like, that sounds so depressing to me. No, but here's the good thing about getting older. Things get easier.
Mm-hmm.
And you get more secure and more comfortable. And you know, like, you're going to be okay as mm-hmm. you get older. Like, all the fears slowly disappear. You know, I remember even just in the work world, like, I never thought that things would get done unless I got it done that day. So right. I would kill myself
yes.
till 1 a.m. And then I would only shut my eyes when I couldn't keep them open with toothpicks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now I know, like, okay, the day is over. I'm done. I can't do any more mentally or physically. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to put it away and the world will go around tomorrow and I will wake up early and I will figure it out. That stuff only comes with, you know, years and experience and getting wiser and mm-hmm. older. So yes. we have to embrace that.
And I think it's a great lesson that you teach that you're still learning all the time. I can't believe how many times you'll be like, listen to this podcast or read this book or mm-hmm. read this blog, or you're always trying to learn and grow.
Oh yeah.
So it's a continual journey.
Oh, for sure. You know, no one knows everything, even right. like the spiritual gurus and all of these amazing people. Everyone's flawed. Mm-hmm. Everyone's still learning in certain areas. Maybe they've mastered some, but they're getting better in others or trying in others. You know, so it's like, never look at anybody like they've got it all figured out, because I promise you they don't.
Right.
Even the ones that really put on a good show, they don't. Everyone's hopefully trying.
Yeah.
And in some areas they may be ahead of you and you can look up to them and take a page out of their book and, mm-hmm. and figure out how to add that into yours. But
right. That's a great way to look at it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I mean, you two are so ahead of the journey. Like, think about it. Mm-hmm. I started probably my mid-30s mm-hmm. going on this journey. And you know, Ashley and I are like on the same page. Oh, did you listen to Carolyn Miss on yeah, Super Soul Sunday? Oh yeah, I did. I was just listening to it too. Like, the fact that you already are there yeah. is, you know, you're going to be so far ahead of the game, which is cool. Right.
And I think that's kind of
where... And that's in the game of life, which is so much more important.
Right. And I think when you do open your eyes to things and maybe your partner hasn't yet, it also can create a big distance, because now you see things you didn't see and they're not seeing the things you see, and it can create tension.
You have to grow together.
You have to grow together. And if the other person's not willing, you have to like move forward. Yep. You know?
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk to some other very wise women yes. today in the podcast. Yes. I'm so excited. Thank you guys for joining us again on Conversations with Maria Menounos, the podcast edition, where we bring you a free, fresh source of news, insight, the best of all of our SiriusXM shows for the week. You can find us every Friday right here on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to help us out, please. We do this for free and we work really hard at it. We'd love for you to comment, rate, subscribe, tell a friend about the show. We're really trying to grow this. And we're hoping, if you like this enough, you'll want to come join us on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109 weekdays at 1 p.m. to be with us every single day. You can also find us on demand on the SiriusXM app. Today on the show, I'm very, very excited to let you know who's coming up. Ali Webb created the Dry Bar, which we all know and love because we can go in for a quick blowout and look fabulous for a very small amount of money, right? Compared to what it used to be to get your hair looking like that. And she's going to reveal the difficulties of being a woman in business, how she changed her management style to become a better boss, yes. which I loved.
So interesting, right?
I loved hearing her be vulnerable yes. about her flaws. I thought that was so powerful and how she got past them. We also have Eve Torres Gracie. She's a 3-time WWE Divas Champion and the head instructor of Women Empowered, a self-defense program that can be used regardless of your size or ability. Athletic ability, of course. She teaches us about the psychology of an attack, the importance of setting boundaries really quickly. You want to make yourself what Eve calls a bad victim, and she is going to tell you how. And it's such a great interview and such important information. We're going to start off with Ali Webb, co-founder of The Dry Bar. Guys, my next guest today co-founded the $100 million hair blowout company called Dry Bar, which has its own product line and over 100 locations, actually 102 to be precise. Woo. Also a New York Times bestselling author, she loves to share tips with other entrepreneurs and is doing just that on her new podcast, Raising the Bar. Please welcome Allie Webb.
Yay!
Hi, Allie.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Your
thanks
hair
for
looks
being
great
here
today.
Thank you. I just got it trimmed. You
I
know
what's
so
short?
Yeah. So cute. I didn't realize it was growing and I hadn't gotten it cut. And so I asked Dimitri, who does my hair, I said, I think I need like layers in the front. It's so heavy. I can't do anything with it. So we sat by the pool. We go upstairs. He starts trimming and he goes, no, you need a whole cut. You've lost your style. And I didn't even realize. So this is like half chlorinated, by the way. I didn't really wash it after.
It looks bouncing and behaving, babe.
I mean, he can make chlorine hair look great. That's for sure.
Don't you have a Dry Bar right around here too?
I do.
Right?
I go to it all the time.
The one up the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
I go to the one on Sunset.
I know, that's your jam, right? Yeah. Everyone's got like their Dry Bar. I love it.
Although my girl Joni, you guys moved to New York.
She's been with the company. I mean, she's such a great testament.
Love her.
Yeah, I mean, she's been with us since the first store in Brentwood, and she's like had every position you can imagine. And she was like ready for a new challenge and had never lived in New York City yet. We were like, good, go. It's such a rite of passage.
Yeah,
you know?
It was exciting for her. But they stole away my lady from Jaima and go run the New York one.
Just go to New York. I think she's in Tribeca.
I'm there all the time, yeah.
I was perfect.
So, Allie, let's talk about how this all kind of got started. Where did Dry Bar start?
Well, I mean, I could go really far back and tell you it started when I was like a little girl. I mean, I grew up in South Florida where it was like, you know, humid, frizzy hair central, and my hair was naturally curly and it was always frizzy, and I used to always beg my mom to blow out my hair when I was like 7-8 years old, like little, but I just didn't like, I couldn't articulate it back then, but my hair was just like a frizzy mess and I hated it. And when my mom would blow it out, or I would convince her to like take me with her to when she was going to get her highlights at her local salon and they would blow out my hair, it was like I wouldn't wash it for as long as humanly possible. And I just always felt better, I guess, when I was a kid. And so, you know, fast forward to many, many, many years later and like after high school and not knowing what I wanted to do with my life. And even though hair was something that I had like, you know, through high school, and I'm sure you guys have been there too, when you're in high school and you're, if you have naturally curly hair and you're trying to like figure out how to like tame it and what to do, I would blow it out the night before and then sleep on it and hope that would like magically make the frizz go away, and nothing ever worked. So it was like this thing that was always there in the back of my mind. And, you know, when everybody was going off to college and trying to figure out what they wanted to do with their lives, I was like, how do you guys know? Like, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I spent a good couple of years kind of bouncing around. I moved to New York City. I thought I wanted to work in fashion. Like, I had all these different things that I kind of thought I wanted to do. But hair was just always in the background as something I wanted to do. But, like, what was I going to do with it? And, you know, it wasn't until a lot of failed career attempts that I decided to go to beauty school and to kind of take that plunge, which was, like, a tough conversation with my parents. And they were like, you want to, you know, just you want to be a hairdresser, and they didn't see much of a future in it.
What did your parents do for a living?
So it very much informs like who I am. My parents had their own business growing up. So they had what is what's known as the Schmata business. It was like little old lady clothing stores. And in South Florida, and they were pretty, you know, ahead of their time in thinking too, because my dad comes from a long line of Schmata people, but in,
we were the Schmata business to my grandparents.
Oh, really? Yeah, it was like it's like a thing, and it's like it's
basically Schmata,
like,
a Jewish thing.
It is.
It's like clothes that are like Schmata, like you know,
oversized, like muumuus.
Okay.
So it's just like, and like elastic waist pants and polyester and like
Yiddish.
Yes,
Yiddish word.
Perfect word. So. But my dad realized we were living in Boca Raton, and my dad was like a buyer or whatever. And he realized that, similar to Dry Bar, there's a hole in the market because these older women didn't really have a place to shop. They could really only go to the mall and shop at like, you know, department stores. So he had the idea to put Flips, which is my dad's nickname, in these little shopping centers where the trolley would take over the older ladies, you know, this like that old woman kind of clientele would take them to this strip center where there was the bagel shop and there was the pharmacy and there was
Smart.
All the restaurants and their daily use. Everything
so it was
they had
easy.
To, It was easy. So he opened Flips. He, you know, didn't spend a lot of money, but brought in clothes that he thought were a little bit sharper for these older ladies, stuff that they were having to pay a lot for at the department store. So anyways, they opened the store Flips, and, you know, they ended up opening about, I think, maybe 10 in South Florida. But and it was a very different time, a very different business. But the lessons that my brother, Michael, you know Michael, mm-hmm. you've met him before, yeah. both of you, mm-hmm. I think. We were like sweeping the floors in Flips, and we were watching how my parents bend over backwards for customers. My dad used to get orange juice and coffee and bagels for the little men sitting at the front waiting for their wives and newspapers, because if they were happy and content sitting there for a while, their wives could shop longer and buy more clothes. And
smart.
So it was pretty genius. My dad was like the mayor of this shopping center. And so we just grew up in that world. So, you know, and I referenced the beauty parlor and hairdresser thing as them not being super into that, because next to Flips was this like old lady beauty parlor, and they were like,
that was their vision.
That's
of it.
What you want to do? And I was like, no, I'm going to move to New York, and I'm going to do, you know, fashion shows and editorial. And I didn't think dry bar at that point, but I thought I would do something, you know, and my
higher
brother,
end with it.
Yeah, yeah. Something cooler and not.
And that's a vision that they probably can't even understand.
Right. They did not get it.
Yeah.
Like, but as the very supportive parents they were like, listen, if this is, you know, what you want to do. And, you know, I should also mention that before all of this, my brother and I worked for Nicole Miller, and we actually opened – we were both working for Nicole Miller in New York City, and then we moved back to South Florida, opened a Nicole Miller boutique in Meisner Park in Boca, and then in South Beach in Miami. And that was like a fucking disaster. Like, it was terrible. We almost killed each other. And so – but when I made that decision to like sever that relationship, not do that anymore because I wasn't happy – I told my brother, he was the first person I told, like, I think I want to go to beauty school. And he was like, you should totally do that. You'd be great in that field. Whereas my parents were like, not so much. But my brother kind of always understood me better
than
my
parents.
But I
think what was smart from that, too, is like, because dry bar is actually an experience.
Totally.
Which I think also from the way you grew up and what your dad did was like to create a whole experience and lifestyle. I think that's part of what dry bar is so what makes it so amazing is you're not just going in to get a haircut. You're watching a chick flick. It's cool, fun
you're
names.
Right.
It's
like little drinks.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that was just how I thought. I mean, I think of new businesses every day that like, or businesses that exist that could be so much better if they just
totally.
Did this. I mean, we all do, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, honing in on that and being able to, I mean, we got really lucky too, because my brother was the business side of things. My husband is like a branding genius. He worked in advertising for a while, and I was hair. So to be able to bring in this like power team of all the things that we wanted, it was like, you know, a little bit of luck, a lot of hard work.
But where did you come up with the concept?
So when I decided to go to beauty school, I was, you know, I feel like I like found my people, and it was like, oh, like this was like the best thing ever. And I did go down the traditional route, and I worked in salons. I moved to New York City. I worked for John Sahag, who was like, you guys probably, a lot of people don't now, but he was like
it. Quite a personality person.
Yeah.
Like a star diva hair guy.
Yeah. But he was so amazing and talented, but I was like an assistant. I was like the assistant that walked his two big greyhounds on like Madison Avenue, which is a very humbling experience because they're like horses. So
yeah, poop's big.
Yeah,
they were walking you basically.
But I mean, it's pretty humiliating experience. But anyways, and I actually like, while I was working there, and I had been now in, you know, in the business for a couple of years as like a normal like 20-ish person, I was like, I think I want to do something else now. And so I actually got into PR for a minute and worked for Rogers and Cowan in New York City, which is where I met like Lauren Kusarak and all
Beth,
those guys.
Who,
and Beth Katz was my boss.
Who sent you over? No, Beth Andrews.
Oh, Beth Andrews.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Beth Andrews connected me to you years ago when I had my mobile business. Yeah.
Wait, so here, you know, someone would be critical of you for now switching your mind again. But how great was that PR experience for you too?
Incredible. And it was such, and I didn't, again, all of the experiences in my life, you don't realize at the time what they're giving you, but I learned like how to write. I mean, honestly, like I didn't go to college and I knew how to write, but I didn't know how to like, I used to have to do press releases and I worked for Paul Foreign Language. I don't know if you guys know who he was tough. But he taught me how to like structure a press release, and it just taught me how to like be professional. And it was amazing experience that I just thought was kind of fun because, you know, we represented like Paul McCartney and Jennifer Lopez and like all these cool musicians and Faith Hill. And it was just such a fun thing. And I was so happy I did that. But of course, after like 3 years of doing that, I was like, I don't know. And that, and I just met my husband. We were living in New York City. I wanted to get married and start having babies. Like, that was like the only thing I could see. So I met Cameron, who's our creative branding genius at Drybar. We got married, moved to LA. He got a great job in advertising. I became a stay-at-home mom. I was home with my kids for like 5 years. They were 5 and 3 when we started Drybar, but
wow,
now they're 11 and 13, which is like, I just can't believe it. But when they were like, when they were 3 and 5, I just really started to get the itch to get back out and mm-hmm. do something for myself. And I'd now had all this experience in hair, and I could have gone, you know, back into a traditional salon or whatever. But the entrepreneur in me was like, you know, I think I want to do something on my own terms. I, you know, I didn't love having a boss. And so I was like, I think I'm going to start a mobile blow dry business where I would go to women's homes, like my mommy friends. I was very immersed in like the mommy culture in LA because I had just moved to LA and I had 2 little kids, and that was all I knew. So I posted on this, like, this – for moms who are, like, around my age or have kids my age, there was this Google group called Peachhead, which is, like, this random place. But you could post, like, whatever you wanted to do. So I posted that I want to start a little mobile blow-dry business. I'll charge, like, $35 or $40. I'll come to your house when your baby is sleeping and do a blowout. I got inundated with emails from women who were like, yeah, when can you come over? So I started this business. It was called Straight at Home. And during that time, that's when I met Rachel.
Yeah.
I went to Rachel's house and did her hair once. And during that time, I got so busy so fast. And that's when it started – the idea kind of started coming from thinking I should – maybe turn this mobile business into a brick and mortar, or do I bring on other stylists and expand this business, you know, mobily? And there was just there. That's when I realized there was a big hole in the marketplace. Yeah. There was like, you know, your full service salons where you were overpaying for a blowout. And I know you know this. And there was, you know, the discount chains where it's yeah. like you're sitting next to a kid getting a haircut. You're in like bad lighting. It just was like, why isn't there any place like Drybar? And that's when I went to my brother, Michael, and my husband, who, by the way, are both bald and, like, couldn't be further like, hilarious. Hair guys. And I was like, you know, you guys, I think that I should turn Straight at Home into an actual brick and mortar. And my brother, like, took a little more convincing. My husband was like, you know, you get your nails done every week, but I don't usually notice. But when you get a blowout, it's the first thing I notice because he knows what my naturally frizzy hair looks like. Yeah. So they were like, you know, they were pretty in pretty quickly. And so we were like, let's, you know – let's do this. And I felt like I had enough clientele between, like, I was basically running between, like, the Palisades, Santa Monica, Brentwood, you know, a little bit into Beverly Hills. I had all these women. And when I started talking to women about it, my clients, they were like, this is the best idea ever. You should do it.
It was a godsend, honestly. Because literally, you would go into – my hair takes 20 minutes. It's straight to blow out $100, you know, and you're just like
– I know.
But, of course, we were all like, shit, why didn't we come up with what
I know.
Well, I can tell
you – So where was your first location? Sunset?
It was Brentwood.
Okay.
West Hollywood, where Rachel goes, was actually our third location. But, you know, I just felt – it's funny because my brother and I always have this kind of we used to for years about, like, proving the concept, because my brother was like, I think it's just an LA thing. And I was like, I don't think so. I think, like, women everywhere want their hair to look really good. And, you know, you just can't do your hair as well as professional can. You know, it's so funny, you guys shaking your head.
I can't do my hair. Do you know what it is? It's exhausting to have to hold it up. My arm gets really tired. Yeah. And especially if you do have thick hair or long hair,
totally.
it's a lot of work. If you, like, even if you have the skill, like, I think I can do a good job. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
I'd rather not.
And, you know, it's funny because we launched a campaign a couple years ago. It's like, why do you Drybar? Because I've met a lot of women who feel that way, but they're like, oh, but I don't have time to go to Drybar. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, bring your laptop, work for that 45 minutes instead of having to, like, slave away on your own self doing your hair. And then it's like, and then you will have perfect hair for 3-4 days.
Totally.
Versus, like, you kind of trying to figure it out and then you have to wash it again the next day.
Hair is a woman's best accessory. When your hair looks great, everything looks great.
Everything falls into place.
You, even just last week, my hair was driving me crazy and everything wasn't working.
You were annoyed.
Makeup, outfit, nothing was working for me.
Yeah.
And then I got my hair trimmed and I got a good blowout and I was like, life is restored again.
Yeah. But it's true. And I think that that's why we have grown to where we have, because, you know, you see it. If you were to sit in Drybar for a couple hours, you would see, you know, the way women, the way they come in, which is very serious and, like, you know, a little bit mad at the world. And then when they walk out, it's like that Pantene moment where you're like, you're moving your hair. You're looking in every mirror. There is an actual confidence that is exudes from women when they leave Drybar. And that's, you know, that's kind of become our internal like mantra, is like, we're not selling blowouts, we're selling happiness and confidence. Cause that's what happens. So,
well, you know, you also hit at the right time. I think we are living in a time of Instagram, and 100%. Everyone needs to look amazing, whether they're, you know, a real celebrity or they want to be an Insta celebrity. And so it is that kind of right time as well for that. Allie, tell us about the challenges you faced when you started Drybar.
Well, in the early days, it was like, you know, just trying to figure out how to get the doors open, how to get the lights on, like what kind of licensing we needed. And, you know, my brother, Michael, was operating, like he was running a real estate marketing company. Cameron, my husband, was creative director at an advertising agency. And, you know, we were all like kind of moonlighting from, like, by the time we got our kids to bed at like 9 o'clock at night until the wee hours, we were all like, you know, working on this and just trying to figure out how to get it off the ground. And I think that's where it's like so important to have partners who are good at what you're not, things that you don't know, because, you know, my brother was the one who was like putting spreadsheets together and figuring out if this actually was a viable business. And Cameron was developing the website, and I was like trying to start interviewing stylists and finding what we needed. So it's a lot of work. I mean, it's no joke. And you can't, and again, I think having like great partners and people who can pick up some of the slack and the things that you don't know is incredibly important. I mean, I know people do it by themselves, but, you know, I think having those people to like bounce ideas off of, people who have strengths that you don't, is incredibly important when you're in startup mode.
Was it your husband's idea to do all the yellow?
It was, you know, I have to say, everything was like a group idea.
Yeah. Well, he's the branding expert, so I'm like, he must have come up with the concept to like have this look that's consistent, and that yellow makes you happy.
It totally does. But we, you know, I wanted the shop to feel like very light, white, and bright. And then our architect, Josh Heitler, who's out of New York, who's done all of our stores, who does everything for us, you know, he was really like helping hone in on like, we wanted it to be like shabby chic, but then, you know, sophisticated, modern, and a little bit whimsy, which was like a tall order. I just wanted it to feel like white and to be a bar and to feel like almost like you're in like a boudoir kind of feel. And then what was the color going to be? And we went around and around with a lot of colors, and the pink just felt too like it would get, it just wasn't the right thing long term. And yellow just felt bright and happy and was like such a nice contrast to the white. And then gray, because Cameron was working on the website, which was dark gray, which everybody and their mother was like, why are you making a dark gray website for this very, you know, female oriented brand? And he loved the fact that he didn't have really anybody to answer to anymore. And that was like his first foray into entrepreneurship, where he could just kind of call the shots when it came to creative. So it's all been, we've all had different ideas. Like, it was my brother's idea to put the iPhone chargers at all the stations because iPhones die so fast. You know, it's like we've all, once we realized this was going to be a bar theme and how we wanted it to feel, then it was just all very collaborative.
So cool. So now one of the things that I want to get to before we run out of time is you've admitted that you had to soften your management style. And I think a lot of people suffer from this. I've had to learn as well. And I think, you know, getting a brain tumor and just slowing down made me realize that I was doing too much and then I was really short. And so what were some of the things that you adjusted, and how, and where did you learn all of that?
So I think in the beginning, you know, well, the first couple of years even, I feel like it would just like pain me to no end when I would walk into the stores and they weren't the way I wanted them to be, or there was something that wasn't right. And so, you know, and as you grow, you have to let other people make decisions, and other people, you know, are running the stores. And when it was just three stores, I could kind of run between all three and make sure everything was perfect. And then once it got to 4 and 5 and 10 and 20, and, you know, it was like, wow, it's really hard to make sure everything is perfect everywhere. And of course, now we have 100, which is practically impossible. 102. Yeah. So, you know, so that's when it's like important to bring on people and start trusting them. And it was about, I would say, 4 years into Drybar that our private equity guys were like, we think you guys need a professional CEO. At the time, it was my brother, who I, by the way, thought was doing a bang up job. Like, why do we need a professional CEO? And was very against it. But long story short, once we brought in John Hefner, who's, you know, had worked with founders before. And I just recently realized that people have call him the founder whisperer. I didn't know that. But I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, even in our very first interview with him, he used this analogy, like we were like, you know, a three-legged stool, and without, you know, any of us, it doesn't work. And so, you know, I just trusted him almost like off the bat. And as the company grew, he just has this great management style. He's not a micromanager. He feels like he hires great people and lets them do their job. That is a hard thing for me, you know, as an entrepreneur to swallow. I've had so many like what feels like therapy sessions with John where, you know, trying to like figure out ways to, you know, when I go in the stores, like, you know, find the things that are bothering me to like make a list when I come out the stores and send it to the right person versus like berating the manager or making everybody, you know, on edge and stressed out. And that was a really hard thing to, I think I've gotten really good at it, but you know, I would say, I mean, we're 8 years in, I would say you're like, five, six, I started to get a little bit better at it. Mm-hmm. Maybe 6, 7, my brother would tell you. But, you know, just basically getting into that, like, you know, you can't sweat every single thing. And that was a hard thing for me to do. And it's a hard thing for me to, you know, start trusting people. And I think it's just been, it's an evolution. And it's something that you have to just kind of dig deep and know that, like, I'm such a, like, the sky is falling all the time kind of person. And I've really had to, like, just, you know, talk myself down when I see things that aren't perfect and also realize like nothing is ever going to be perfect.
It can't be. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a
tough lesson.
So
one of the things you learned was to make a list of the things that were bothering you and then submit it.
Yeah. So I would like make a mental list in my head because I also didn't want to be like on my phone, like, you know, yeah. like everybody seeing me freaking out. Yeah. I do still take pictures when I'm in a shop of things yeah. that aren't right. And then, you know, we have a pretty big, you know, corporate structure now. We have a lot of great people in place. And then I send an email to the appropriate people in like a much nicer tone. I've adjusted that and said, hey, you know, there are sometimes when I think, you know, we need, you know, I will send it with a little more urgency, but I'm like, you know what, here's our couple things that aren't right that we need to adjust. And sometimes I'll still in a much, much like calmer, softer manner, pull a manager aside and be like, hey, you know, let me tell you why this isn't working and why you shouldn't be doing this. And they always appreciate that as long as it's delivered in like a respectful, like not like tyrant tone. Not that yeah. I was ever a tyrant, but I feel like you could see my stress and I feel like yeah. I've learned how to like, you know, temper that.
Well, is there a specific challenge being a female entrepreneur versus just being an entrepreneur? I feel like there's so much responsibility to that.
Yeah, I think yes and no. I feel like that's a pretty like common question nowadays. And I think that that's like, you know, female versus, you know, male. And I think that there's a lot of there was a lot of things I'd say more in the beginning, especially when we were bringing on like our private equity guys and like, you know, men were taken more seriously. And I think I felt a lot more intimidated when we first started yeah. and over the years. And once I saw how successful Drybar was and how much people loved it, it really gave me so much confidence in myself to be like, I know what I'm doing. I'm smart. I have good ideas. Like I'm just as smart as that guy, you know, even if I don't have an MBA and whatever. So I think that there is that amount of pressure to be like, you know, as smart yeah. as the guy in the room. But I think I've earned my spot.
You're a baller, baby. Yeah.
I love it.
And I've had some, you know, my brother is probably my, you know, well, he is my best friend and my biggest mentor. And, you know, we would be in board meetings and we'd be like texting and I would say like, I would have a question and I would be kind of embarrassed to
like,
ask
what
it,
did that mean or something?
Or ask him like, what the fuck were they just talking about? You know? And then he would always, and I would write back like, I have this question or I think I want to say this. And he'd be like, you should say it. It's a good question. But I think I needed that little nudge from him yeah. to say like, you know, he also helped give me that confidence, you know, mm-hmm. which again, I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier, you know, having those people around you that you really trust and know like won't send you astray, but you can like bounce ideas off of, whether it's a business partner or just like your best friend that you just ask for advice here and there. It's really important. Yeah.
I think it's hard for people because you know you can implicitly trust your brother and your husband, right? So I'm lucky I have Kevin,
right.
But I feel like sometimes Kevin's always like, Marie, you're so smart, you don't realize it. And I'm like, I always feel the same way. I'm always like, oh no, these people are so much smarter and
yeah.
they know how to create a cap table. I don't know how to create a cap table.
Right.
I don't understand this stuff and I get so frustrated with myself. But
who gives you the best advice? At the end of the
Miss
day.
Miss Alice.
That's right.
Miss Alice always gives me the best advice.
But you know, it's like different people serve different purposes yeah. in your life. I'm such a big believer in that. You know, you need yeah. different people for different things.
Yeah, but I like your message is surround yourself with people who are better than you at the things that you aren't good at
exactly.
so that you can succeed. Well, Allie, I look forward to seeing all your other amazing companies because I know this is just the start.
There might be something coming.
Is
I don't
it coming
know.
Soon?
Maybe.
Okay. Okay. Very excited. Very excited. I have some ideas for you too.
I know you do.
Guys, if you want to hear her new podcast for entrepreneurs, it's called Raising the Bar. You can get it on Apple Podcasts on Wednesdays. Hope you enjoyed that interview. Up next, Eve Torres Gracie is going to teach us all about her Women's Self-Defense Program and how you can make yourself a bad victim. Guys, my guest today is a head instructor of the Gracie Women Empowered Self-Defense Program, teaching women techniques that work regardless of size or athletic ability. Also an actress and former three-time WWE... I said that too fast. Three-time WWE Divas Champion. Please welcome Eve Torres Gracie.
Hey!
Hello.
Hi, former... a WrestleMania opponent.
I know. Someone was tweeting me this morning. They're like, she owes you after her makeup got all over your butt. When we did, what was, I know, that sounds really bad.
The stink face.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
People think I pooped my pants to this day. And I'm like,
that's
Eve's
kind of
makeup.
A better story though.
And by the way, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, like I rubbed my butt on your face. That there's something so weird about that right now, but in the moment it didn't feel
it
weird.
Made total sense at the moment.
This is definitely going to make the guys not, giggle.
Yeah. That actually is not a jujitsu move, but it was effective at the time. So
it was effective. So friggin' funny. It really is hilarious because people will not let that die. And I'm like, it's makeup. How could you even think that looks like poop, you weirdos?
It was makeup, 100%.
Yep. See? Yes. You heard it here first. That's an exclusive.
I don't know, Maria. I still think you pooped your pants.
Rude.
No, she had it totally under control.
Oh, man. That was a lot of fun. That was honestly the biggest highlight of my life.
It was so fun. One of my biggest highlights, too.
Think about, before that, how often were you guys headlining or, making it into the big show, right?
Not often.
Yeah.
Not often at all. That was, during my time in WWE, it was kind of a sad time for the women there. Now, obviously, it's so wonderful and amazing to watch just how far the women have come, with the women's revolution. And it's just a different world. But back then, it was really, really difficult. It was really frustrating to want to be able to, perform and really show the world what you're capable of and to kind of feel like... capped out at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So that was I think it had been quite a few years before. It used to be just like a women's battle royal where it was just like a big cluster of women everywhere, falling out of the ring, and we had 10 minutes or a short amount of time. So it was really special.
I remember we were all crying backstage.
Yeah, I was a hot mess.
And you guys were so sweet and you took such good care of me because I was so broken.
Yeah.
And I remember leaving and being like, I didn't even feel anything. Like you guys were so good at what you did.
Well, you had a rib injury, right?
Yeah, I had fractured ribs, fractured feet.
What?
Yes.
Right after Dancing with the Stars.
I was in the middle of Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And literally, you guys, it was like butter. It was like butter. And I was just on autopilot. I had no idea what the hell was happening. How it even all worked out, I don't know. It was really because you guys were so good.
Yeah. Well, and Beth, too. Beth Phoenix.
Yes.
Just amazing.
So now when you look at what's happening with the women's revolution, is there a side of you that's sad that wishes you could jump back in and be a part of it now?
Oh, of course. There's always that little part. You're like, okay, that's what we were going for. That's what we had always wanted. But I've also totally come to terms with where I'm at in life. And I know what comes with that too, the lifestyle that comes with being in WWE and being on the road full time. And I wouldn't be able to sustain my current life now and what I'm doing. So I've definitely come to terms with it, but I have my moments, when I watch pay-per-views or when I watch, just the awesome matches the women are putting together. Mm-hmm. I'm really happy for them though. I'm so excited. And it's, I think everyone plays their role when it's their time, mm-hmm. And so I'd like to think that we played a role in that. It just was kind of, again, a part of that, uh, that revolution. It was just kind of it was like the rumblings were happening back then.
Yeah, you know? I feel like it kind of happened right after that. Like, it was literally not far after our match where, like, it started building. And
yeah, I mean, I remember actually getting a storyline that like, the, you know, the fans actually cared about and were interested in. And that was one of the few that existed at the time with women, you know, that with women involved. And then, you know, obviously they're like, oh, I guess people do care about women.
Yeah.
And they started, you know, just figuring it out more. And I really do believe that Ronda Rousey had a big part. Watching what happened in the UFC, what Ronda did in the UFC, I believe made them go, oh, apparently the world actually wants to see women kick ass. And like, really, you know, these amazing, talented women, and they sell pay-per-views, and like, they can headline pay-per-views. And I think that was a model for them to realize, like, okay, we can do that here.
Yeah.
So I think it was definitely played a role in that.
Totally. I remember going to a UFC match and to see Ronda, and everyone in the arena had Ronda shirts on. They didn't have any of the guys that were performing. It was all about Ronda. So it does make sense. And how funny now that she's in the WWE. Yeah. What have you been thinking about her there?
Oh, I think it's a beautiful transition. I say, like, you know, you got to take what opportunities you have in this world. And I think it makes total sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if she feels like she, you know, did her role, she did amazing things for the world of MMA. And now she can kind of transfer that over to WWE. And I remember because my husband was one of her jiu-jitsu coach for, you know, a big part of her time in the UFC. So I remember actually like sitting down having acai with her, and she was asking me about wrestling. Oh, you know, like she would ask me questions. She was interested even back then, like, about how it works, and she was pretty fascinated with it. So it's something I think that she has been on her mind for quite a while.
Yeah. Have you enjoyed any of her matches? Is there like a moment that sticks out in your head?
Well, just WrestleMania this year was like amazing. I was so happy to see that, just because, you know, a lot of people were not sure whether it would kind of, you know, her abilities would transfer in ring. And I thought they totally did. They told
that
such a great
Army
story.
Ranger roll up.
Dude, it was just like, I had like chills the whole time. I was like, yes. The fans were
died.
So into it. And,
yeah.
And, yeah, she just won everybody over with that. So they did it was a great story. It was just it's a great match. She did awesome.
So cool. And you and your husband, so you guys have your studios, and he trained her, which is so cool, right?
Yeah, he was her jiu-jitsu coach for a while, him and his brother, Hidon.
That's so cool. So now, what kind of got you into this?
So I had my first jiu-jitsu class, my first jiu-jitsu lesson, almost a little over 10 years ago, 10 and a half years ago. And actually, coincidentally, it was right around the time I started with WWE. And the other coincidental part is it was actually my first lesson was with my husband, my now husband. And it was my now sister-in-law, Victoria, who was dating his brother, Hidon, stay with me. and she convinced me to come take a jiu-jitsu class. And I said, sign me up. Like, I'm all about it. My brother had trained jiu-jitsu in high school. I was starting on the road with WWE. I had already had a kind of a sketchy situation happen on the road when I was driving by myself. So the idea of self-defense, and I was like, yeah, it's a no-brainer. And she's like, oh yeah, and I also want you to meet somebody. So I'm like, okay. She's like, no. I just, yeah,
fighting.
I'm like, great. So I'm thinking I'm just like going to shake his hand and be like, great, nice to meet you. No, I walk in and he's like, I go into the room and he like closes the door behind us. It was a semi-private. She was in there with me, and I had my first jiu-jitsu class with him, and literally like I'm on the floor. He's like, yeah, lay down. So what would you do from here? As he like mounts on top of me, puts his hands on my neck and like holds me down. And I'm like, well, first I'm going to turn bright purple because I'm blushing. But then I was like, just fought for my life to try to get out of this position and couldn't. And you
even
know,
with your wrestling background,
even with my, you know, I was a gymnast growing up, I've always been an athlete and somebody who kind of prides myself in, you know, the physical strength that I had. And I had nothing. And it was such a great realization for me to see like, okay, with this simple, effective technique, I can actually escape from this. And so like that, literally the first class is when the light bulb went off and I was like hooked. And it also really made me wonder, like I was almost mad I was almost mad. I'm like, why have I never learned this? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't all women know this? And it was like, I was like mad about the fact that I hadn't, it had been so long. And, you know, I was into my 20s when I started learning jiu-jitsu. And so, you know, me and my husband over the years really decided, like, my personal mission now is to make jiu-jitsu appealing and digestible and understandable to women, because mm-hmm. it's such an important martial art and a form of self-defense. Yeah. But it's not the most appealing martial art when you kind of, it's just at its surface, you know? So we really had to kind of come up with it, and the program had already existed. It was called Women Empowered, but it had to go through a lot of kind of evolution over the past, I would say, 10 years to really get it to where it is today, mm-hmm. Where we speak the language of women and where we have women we have more women students at our jiu-jitsu school than any jiu-jitsu school in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I've never thought as a woman, oh, let me take jiu-jitsu.
Nope.
Right?
Yeah.
I've taken Krav Maga, and I know people will take, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, what are our worst case scenarios are getting raped, right? When you're pinned down. So really that should be top of mind for us to think, okay, we need to figure out how to get out from underneath somebody. Does that make sense?
Exactly.
Isn't that kind of our number one threat in a weird way?
That's exactly why for me, it was like, why are women not learning this?
Yeah.
Because that is where the focus is. And not only the focus, but that's actually there is a strength in that position. So
exactly.
And I know AJ, you gave a little bit of explanation of kind of jiu-jitsu and, you know, its history, but, it is the martial art that really prides itself in being able to defeat a larger opponent, even from the bottom of the fight. Yeah. So imagine you are on the bottom of the fight, potentially with a man between your legs. And in jiu-jitsu, that position is called the guard.
It's
a very strong position where you can choke somebody unconscious, you can break their arm,
as the person underneath, as the victim.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Guard is one of the strongest positions in BJJ in self-defense. And the guy who doesn't know it,
almost like you would want to let them get to that place and then attack?
If they've got you down,
almost.
If you're going to be on the ground, you want them in your guard.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. If you can, you would like to be on your feet and out of there, right? That's ideal. But if you have to be on the ground, you want them in your guard, which is this position where, again, your opponent is between your legs. And so just even having that change of mindset where you go, wait, my worst case scenario, what I thought was my worst case scenario is actually a position of strength and power.
Power.
That really changes your mindset on mm-hmm. in terms of what is possible for you as, you know, as a woman, and what is possible in these, you know, really extremely dangerous situations.
See, I just didn't even know what jiu-jitsu was. And I think that's the thing, is like educating people on what it is. So it's ground fighting.
So that's a huge part of it. Yeah. A huge part of it is ground fighting, but there's also a huge, you know, the idea is survival. So it's, I would say it is a martial art dedicated to surviving mm-hmm. as opposed to necessarily defeating the opponent. Now you can defeat them again with chokes, breaking their arm, breaking their legs. You know, there's plenty of ways to defeat them, but I would say it's more of a survival mindset, mm-hmm. which is super important. But there is where jiu-jitsu really thrives is on the ground. Yeah. And knowing that in most cases, fights do go to the ground, whether it's man on man, whether it's man on woman.
80%.
It will go to the ground. So if you don't, it's like if you don't know how to swim, you're going to drown. If you don't know what to do on the ground in a fight, you are going to exhaust and you are going to be defeated. Mm-hmm. So it's so important. But, you know, for most, I would say like the untrained eye, when you watch a jiu-jitsu, if you walk into any normal jiu-jitsu school, you're like, okay, so it's a bunch of, you know, men sweat holding each other, like hugging and rolling around and sweating on each other. Yeah. You're like, what's going on here? So it's not traditionally the most appealing to women. And that's why it was so important for us to really, you know, create this program that, first of all, really addresses the most common threats against women. So, you know, there are over 600 jiu-jitsu techniques out there. And as AJ mentioned, it takes well over 10 years to usually earn your black belt. So there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of techniques. But which of those are the most important for women to learn? Mm-hmm. Meaning if you have 1 year to train with us or train jiu-jitsu, what are the most important ones for survival, mm-hmm. for you knowing like the most common situations that will happen. And that's where a program really focuses on.
Condensed and focused.
Yeah, condensed and focused. And so those types of scenarios, again, surviving from the bottom, learning how to escape from the bottom of the fight, learning how to disengage even from standing. But beyond just the strategies and these techniques, it's also understanding the mindset.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, self-defense is set, it, to me, it's a mindset more than it is a set of techniques. And, you know, obviously I love the physical component of it. I love the jujitsu aspect and I love that kind of empowerment that happens from physically learning these techniques. Mm-hmm. But I think beyond that, there's, you know, there's so much more that self-defense covers. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is obviously the awareness component, and awareness is not just, oh, be aware of your surroundings. I think to me, awareness is understanding what violence against women actually looks like. And I think that the media sometimes does a disservice to women by, I think, making women believe that the most, and not that this doesn't happen because it does, but the threat that women are most, I would say, concerned with is, you know, the guy who is hiding behind the trash can in the alley when you're walking to your car.
Yeah.
Right. And that is a threat. And it is definitely a threat that should be addressed, again, with situational awareness and is a concern and is a very scary thought to think about. But more than 3/4 of assaults against women are actually committed by somebody that she knows.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I say awareness about, you know, understanding, you know, the self-defense mindset is knowing that those aren't our only threats and that we have threats in our everyday lives. And this can be
a coworker, who's drunk at a party
exactly,
or whatever,
or a husband or a family member or, you know, a boss, like it can be anyone. And so really understanding that, and applying those same type of awareness principles that you would to, you know, some drunk guy walking on the street that you're afraid of, we have to apply, not that we should be, you know, paranoid about everyone around us, but apply similar principles
to those types
of situations.
There's kind of like the precursor to any kind of situation that I really enjoyed that you talked about, which was, you know, if someone's walking towards you to tell them to stop.
Yeah.
I would never have thought of that. I was watching a video where you were talking about if someone's, you know, walking towards you at the gas station, if a guy's walking towards you, you can tell him to stop. And I'm like, what? I can tell somebody to stop? Like, it's almost like we need permission to create these boundaries, because otherwise I'm going to think that he's going to think I'm a crazy person for saying something to him like that.
That's exactly why it's such an important part of our training, because it's actually not like the intuitive response for a lot of women is to either just like, you know, pretend like it's not happening because they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
Or again, to just like, you know, like I don't want to be rude to this person.
Yes.
I don't want to be impolite.
Yes.
So what if he needs help?
Yeah.
You know, when instead of thinking about what if I'm not safe, you know, like let's talk about our safety and have that be our number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is shifting the mindset to believe that we have the right and we deserve, we are worth defending and we are worth setting boundaries with other people. And it doesn't matter what they think about us at the mm-hmm. end of the day, as long as we're safe. But yeah, in a situation like that, you know, where there is somebody that you kind of pick up on your radar who is potentially making you feel uncomfortable, or you're just not sure about their intentions, you know, what we say is that the sooner that you establish a boundary with them, the sooner we can clarify what their intentions are.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a man who's walking towards you, kind of, you know, stumbling towards you and you're like, why is, you know, I'm at a gas station, there's not many people around, why is he walking in my direction? You could either say, well, maybe his car is behind me, or maybe he dropped something and mm-hmm. he's getting it. Or you could put your hands out and you can say, excuse me, sir, stop right there. You know, can I help you, or back up, or whatever you need to say to have them stop in their tracks. And at that moment, when you tell them to stop, they are going to have one of several responses, you know. So either they're going to recognize that, especially with your hands up and you kind of addressing that, you see this as a potentially threatening situation. They're either going to say, oh, I'm, you know, so sorry, I was walking to my, walking mm-hmm. to the bus stop, walking to my car, who knows. Or if they proceed,
that tells you that they have bad intentions. So kind of at that moment that you set a boundary with somebody, you can then assess their intentions. And you want to do that as soon as possible, right? So you would like to do that when they are still 10 feet away or more.
So then you can get a head start or something.
Yeah, to keep distance, to do what you got to do to stay safe, to run to somewhere inside the gas station, say, where there's help. And this is kind of a specific situation, but just this idea of setting boundaries with people to assess their intentions is so important. And again, it's difficult to do that because what's naturally going to happen? Let's say that, he may even have had bad intentions, but the moment he gets called out, it's like, oh, you crazy, calling you names. Oh, what you think, don't flatter yourself, or there's all kinds of things this backlash that happens is setting boundaries with people.
Yeah.
And so expecting that, knowing that that's a part of it, you almost just can relieve yourself of that and say, it's not my job to smile at every man who walks around me and walks towards me and to make their day. Yes, it's not, that's not our job. It's our job to keep ourselves safe and, to worry about our life and our space and our boundaries.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that people who pick victims do that for a living. So you want them to know that you are a bad victim selection. They will go pick an easier victim. Yeah, maybe someone's going to get picked, but it won't be you. So by setting your boundaries like that, they're going to rethink that choice. They're going to say, okay, this actually isn't a good victim. I'm out.
Yeah, and when you think about what is their ideal situation, ideally, if they are a predator, they're going to want you to ignore them to the very last minute so they can get so close to do whatever they have planned, right? But the moment you set that boundary, you're looking them straight in the eye with your hands up and you look assertive and you're standing tall, they're thinking, maybe not this one.
Yeah.
Maybe not this situation. And as we kind of mentioned, this same thing applies with people that we know. Mm-hmm. Learning how to set boundaries with those, which is actually much harder, I think, to do.
Well, yeah,
it's kind of easier to somebody that you're never going to see again. You're like, I don't care if he thinks I'm crazy, whatever. Yes. But again, when it's your coworker who keeps giving you these creepy hugs every day, and you're like, I don't want this anymore. How do you address that in a way that you feel like, okay, I have to see him every day. How can I address this? And that's part of boundary setting. That's part of the self-defense mindset and learning how to do that and feel like you have the right to do that of all things.
That's the biggest thing here is I feel like, I know for me, I don't want them to think that I'm a crazy person. I don't want them to, so I will take being uncomfortable and it sucks.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to kind of get out of that, right? Because I don't know what to say. So I'll do the nervous giggle.
Sure.
I'll let them rub me because they're literally just rubbing your boobs when they're giving you the creepy hug. Yeah. That's what they're doing. And I'll just let them do what they're going to do because I just don't know how else to get out of it.
Yeah. I actually have a video that's on creepy hug defenses.
That's a good video.
It's all about creepy hug defenses.
Can we do one for my Instagram today?
Oh, we totally can. Yes. So there's different levels of it and different levels of creepiness. And obviously the one part of it is to just put your hand out and say, I prefer handshakes.
Ooh, I like that.
In your hand, you stop them right there and then you put out your hand. I prefer handshakes. And that's a great way to establish okay, that's her thing. And that's, that's how she wants it.
So thank you for saying that. See, I can't say this. It has to come from you powerful women. I can't say talk about creepy hugs because I'm the creepy hugger guy. So it has to come from
you. It's so creepy for hug women. People, AJ, you but don't. I know what you're saying. Your species.
Yes. My species, gender of really creepy
your gender.
People.
And I also believe that having the physical self-defense to back that up, that's what gives us the confidence to say, excuse me, back up. Because I know if he takes another step, I actually know what to do.
Have you been in a situation where you've had to activate these powers?
So I actually used it against, I activate them all the time. Let's say that.
Yeah.
And again, not necessarily the physical aspect, but I'm activating my self-defense mindset every day of my life. However, the physical technique, I did end up using it on a coworker. And choked him unconscious.
That's the best. Yeah. That's so gratifying.
And, he only weighed 240 pounds or something.
Oh,
no. But no, and it was again him just trying to get fresh and funny and got carried away. Granted, I also was really trying to test my jiu-jitsu techniques. I don't recommend people do that after I was only trained for 6 months.
And you choked him unconscious at 240.
Yes,
you need a crown.
Wow.
But after that, it was like, no, not him, and no one else wanted to. They're like, okay, so we're going to leave that alone.
What about your students? Like, have they come back to you with any stories where they were able to put this
into use? A lot of times, the most common thing that they put into use is that boundary setting.
Yeah.
Is that all these situations that happen, and their natural reflex right now is to put their hands up and tell them to stop where they are or back up or whatever it might be. And they, you know, just the fact that that's their reflex.
Yeah.
When it's actually, again, that's a trained thing that you have to train women in.
By the way, think about that for a second. If we as women had that moment and we kind of do like almost like a karate stance, everyone kind of knows what that generally looks like and feels like, and like stop right there, they're gonna be like, shit, she knows something. Well, and I don't want any of that. And AJ, like you said, they're gonna go find another victim. So I think that's brilliant.
It's a big part of it. And when you actually do know something, they feel it. They're like, I don't know. Does she have a gun? Or can she just choke somebody out with her bare hands?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What's going on here? Like, wonder. They can feel that.
I love that. Eve, thank you so much. I learned so much today. And I'm going to start setting my boundaries.
That's right. Let's
do it. No more creepy hugs from people. I can't wait to learn my defense techniques. Nick,
yeah,
you are never creepy hugging me again.
No, AJ's the creepy hug guy. Wait a minute.
We've got defenses for
you. We have no creepers here, thank God. Except for the rubber ducky in my pool.
Yep.
Of course, if you want to find out more about Eve's self-defense program, you can visit GracieWomenEmpowered.com to enroll. You can find Eve on Instagram and Twitter at Eve Torres Gracie. Thanks as always for listening, guys. You can follow us at Maria Menounos, at SiriusXM Stars, at Miss Ashley Daniels, at Christy Reports. And remember, be nice people, make good choices, and be present.